Coming up here on KNKX is a story from our show Sound Effect. Here's Sound Effect host Gabriel Spitzer.
You're tuned to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're talking about bugs in the system. Brandon Hopkins was on track to become a high school biology teacher, and then he was invited by one of his professors at Washington State University to work in a lab with honeybees.
Yeah, I bought every kind of itch cream they sold in the store because my hands were swollen and itching from all the bee stings, and I soaked my hands in ice every night and, you know, questioned my decision-making.
Those decisions led him along a very unexpected career path as the guy who runs the world's only bee sperm bank. Now, people bank sperm for lots of the animals that we raise for food, cattle, pigs, sheep, but there was never a repository for the germplasm, that's what they call it, for bees. Well, at least not until Brandon Hopkins figured out how to freeze bee sperm for the first time. Today, he's an assistant research professor at WSU, and he travels the world to places like Italy, Algeria, or France to gather bee sperm and add it to the frozen collection in Pullman. When we chatted, I had to get the obvious question right out of the way. So, Brandon, let's get down to brass tacks. How do you extract semen from a bee?
We kind of squeeze the head and thorax of the bee and kind of pull back on the abdomen a little bit. And then that causes the endophallus, for the scientific listeners out there, or the penis to pop out. Then at the tip of that is a small ball of mucus, and then floating on that is a microliter or so of semen.
So what does the bee make of that?
Yeah, it's a life ending event for that individual male. But if we want to get anthropomorphic about it, I think it's maybe one of the better ways for a male to go in nature. So if he is successful and lucky enough to mate with a queen out there in the world, that's a life ending event for him as well. That's the only purpose for male honeybees in the colony. They don't collect nectar or pollen. Don't make honey, don't clean up around the hive. They just fly out every day looking for a potential mate. When there's no more flowers and the food starts to dry up, the workers, the females in the colonies, will actively drag out the drones, and they'll prevent them from coming back in the hive, and they'll freeze and or starve to death each fall. And then they'll just make new ones the following spring.
Wow, brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So they're like they're really like tools.
Yeah, some people call it, flying genitalia.
So what do you do with all that frozen bee semen?
We maintain samples of all of these collections that we've done for the conservation of that germplasm. So a real seed bank or germplasm bank. Having that genetic diversity, as we put it in the population, will help with adaptability of the population. And then also for long-term sake, in case there's some other devastating issue with the bee population, we'll have this germplasm preserved.
So that means they'd be more resilient if there's a new disease or pest or climate change or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And then the other benefit to going and collecting these different subspecies is that these different subspecies have very different characteristics. So one of the most popular ones used here in the U.S. is Apis mellifera ligustica, the Italian honeybee. And so it's very well adapted for that Mediterranean climate compared to a bee from the mountains, like the Caucasian honeybee from the Alps we collect in Slovenia, or the Caucasian honeybee that from the Caucasus Mountains that we've gone to collect in the Republic of Georgia. Those mountain bees, are well adapted to cold climates. They are well adapted at overwintering, being very conservative with their food stores and things like that. And so by going and collecting these different subspecies, it allows U.S. beekeepers to really select for bees that are best for their region within the U.S.
And this may seem obvious, but we're not just talking about honey production here, right? Why are bees so important?
Yeah, there you go. So bees are far more valuable as pollinators than they are for honey producers.
So from the point of view of a regular person going to the supermarket and checking off items on my shopping list. What would my life be like if honeybees were to disappear or take a serious hit?
What you're left with are grains, you know, so you're left with kind of wheat and rice and things like that. So the oranges and the apples and all the small fruits, so all the kind of things that you consider sort of healthy, delicious fruits and vegetables are then gone. And then
that means that everybody really has an interest in healthy bees.
Right. Yeah. You can even contribute the pollination to our milk supply and dairy industry because they pollinate alfalfa seed that then goes to grow the hay that feeds our dairy cattle. And so that's kind of the stark outlook. But really what we're talking about is more like the drastic increase in prices of these kinds of things as these
so they're not going to, even if they didn't go away entirely, they would be a lot harder to get.
Right. And I think what it would create is a major change in our agricultural system, and it wouldn't be as efficient as it is today. So you can go and look at pictures of hand pollination of apples in Japan. And so, I mean, you're talking about the labor costs of going in with a tiny little paintbrush and brushing pollen on individual flowers to produce fruits. And so you can probably imagine the cost of that apple if you have to pay someone to go hand pollinate all the flowers in the trees.
So why is this important now?
The need for managed colonies is more important than ever, because it used to be that there'd be, you know, woods or natural areas around the small farms, the systems that the way they used to do it, that you wouldn't have to pay for pollination. There'd be a feral hive in the woods next door and things like that. You know, our modern agricultural system demands that we have this migratory beekeeping system.
And by that, you mean people trucking bees in.
Yeah. And I mean, on a massive scale. So we're talking about the movement of, pretty close to 2 million colonies into California for almond production alone, and then 500,000 after that are moved up here to Washington for apple pollination and small fruits and all that kind of stuff. And that, you know, and that's just California and Washington.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Brandon.
Hey, thanks. And you can maybe ask your listeners to plant some bee-friendly forage out there for them in their garden,
like,
and around their house. Some things that are good for people, like if you can plant oregano or lavender or sage, those kinds of things are great for bees. Sunflowers, really a lot of those colorful purples and yellows.
That makes bees happy.
That makes bees happy, and it's one of the big contributors to the difficulties bees are having is the lack of food and forage.
Well, we'll all do our part.
All right.
Well, Brandon Hopkins is an assistant research professor at WSU, and that's where he heads up the world's only sperm bank for bees.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Brandon, take care.